6 o'clock, Tuesday, January 7th. Myself, Alderman Peterson's here, Alderman Koch, Alderman Frieders,
and... He's back there.
Let's see here. Citizen comments. We don't have any citizens. No one here. Minutes for correction or approval from December 3rd, 2019. Okay. We need to make a motion to approve that.
Yeah, you can do a voice vote. So.
Okay.
I'm good.
Joel?
We got approval?
Thumbs up votes are okay, too.
Many
as long as the record reflects it.
All right, so minutes for correction approval are approved. On to new business. EDC 2020-01, building permit report for November 2019.
In November, we had 15 single-family detached homes. 16 single-family attached homes. Those were predominantly the both units they're building over there, and then we also have the new ones of Lennar building on Prestwick as well. So,
Raintree.
I'm sorry. Right, it's Raintree, but it's right adjacent to Prestwick. It's that kind of Ren Road turns off there.
Perfect. Those are coming along pretty good too.
Yeah. It's pretty. Actually, it's actually pretty funny because the architects, the engineers they use, and the fire suppression company and fire suppression design professionals are all the same for everybody in the community that do townhomes.
Really? Nice.
With the exception of Abbey Properties, and they're actually hiring them to do work on their new property. So it's just kind of like, it's very odd. You get the same phone call from the same fire company. Hey, I'm like, I'm going to talk to you about this. Oh, the both of us? No, I'm going to deal with this one. Okay, you're out.
It's all the same, yeah.
Yeah.
Good. And it's all townhomes, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Five homes.
Then are those models that in Raintree that they're putting up? Because there's two homes that look like have broken ground and they're being built. Are those going to be models?
No, there's a
one right by the clubhouse there.
They have a few there in models, and there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. There's 6 over there right now.
Okay. And I knew there was at least 2.
Yeah, a few will be models, a few will be specs, and you know.
Okay. That's fast.
Yeah, they're going fast.
All right, moving on to EDC 2020-02, Building Inspection Report for November 2019.
All right, as expect, we did 315 inspections last month. Majority of them were single-family homes, things like that. We're seeing the slowdown now of the roofs again. We still have some storm damage going on. We'll have some bleed over into next year, too, people that decided to wait to have the roofs put on until next year. So we're just keep chugging along on those. I think we have 386 roofs that are supposed to be finished but have never called final inspection. No, I'm sorry, it's 836. So we're trying to figure out how to get those inspections in at some point in time.
Wow.
Wait, how many?
Yes. I had Gina with your house today. So, yeah.
Waiting for a final inspection, huh?
Well, the roofing companies, once they get done and they get there, they don't ever call for final inspection, or they tell the homeowner to call, or they don't tell anyone anything, they just leave and go to the next one, and then we're sitting there going, well, they never call for final inspections, so we just assume and have to wrap the ticket and go out and do it, because we can't.
I just got my invoice today. I just got my final invoice today from the damage on Memorial Day. I'm good to go.
Wow.
Razdor.
Okay, EDC 2020-03, Property Maintenance Report for November 2019.
Okay, we heard 4 cases in November. The only one was the one in Center Park where it was found liable for $100. That was just a motor vehicle that was sitting there. That that property, it's the same vehicle, I believe it's a Tahoe, has been sitting there for a little over a year and a half. Flat tires, no plates, We've tried to work with the lady that owns the property there, and
not working.
Yeah, no traction at all. So we're just following our process and sending her a letter and hoping that she does it and send a citation when it comes down. But I think the hearing officer 2 months ago told her that if she just moved it, he would vacate all the fines that she had accumulated that was under his jurisdiction, and she still didn't come in and move it or anything like that. So,
I mean, she's got four flat tires now, or what?
Two, I believe.
Two. Yeah.
And no non-valid plates. I think she's missing a plate in the back, and there's a non-valid plate in the back, no plate in the front, and a couple of random issues.
So, what point can you have a towed?
You cannot have a towed on private property. Only communities that can do that are homeboat communities.
Oh, it's on private. I thought it was on the parkway.
I thought it was on the parkway too.
Or with a court order. So.
Yes. Yeah. Yep. It's right the back bumper is like a little bit over the sidewalk. But it's technically it's on private property, but it's still a violation. So.
Moving on to EDC 2020-04. Economic Development Report for December 2019. Lynn, what do you have for us?
Okay. Well, you have your report, and then I have a couple of other things to bring you up to speed on. First of all, we have a wonderful announcement that we've been waiting for over a year. Popeyes is coming to Yorkville. Yeah. They're going to be landing... because they can do that, right? In front of Menards, directly north of the Rosati's building. So between the Rosati's building and Millhurst Ale House, there are actually two lots. So it'll be immediately to the north of Rosati's. It'll be a freestanding single-use building with a drive-up. They're anticipating actually applying to the city with their permits at the end of the month, by the end of January. When they break ground in the spring, it takes about 4 months from the time when they break ground so they're able to be open. So, summer opening, we're hoping for. And
is that owner, he or she have any other businesses in Yorkville?
No, not in Yorkville. They're from Sugarland, Texas. The company is ZNH Foods. He is the largest franchisee of Popeyes restaurants in the U.S. He has 12% of the overall franchises.
Wow.
And in 2020, he will hit 300. He will have 300. He has like 290 or whatever, but from what he's going to build in this year, he will achieve 300 stores.
So, does he have any of the Roar stores?
I don't know.
Oh, because I know there's a couple that are over there.
He has a direct connection to the gentleman that owns the Burger King. They're actually brothers. Oh. So, but it's a family that does a lot of franchise work. So, we have another new addition. I know I've been working on this for over a year. So, that's finally.
I know the Southsiders were hoping it was going to be.
I know, but this is really what it's going to be, a freestanding building with a drive-up. It'll be
very nice.
What we should do. I just also wanted to let you know that the Seal School property that was the former Meadowvale has closed, so that we'll be seeing that coming forth. And then I also just wanted to make a mention that Yorkville Professional Center, you know, years ago, I still identify it as the Hatcher Building because I'm kind of old. So that is new owners, and they're kind of remaking it, reinventing it under Yorkville Professional Center. And this Thursday, they're having a open house and a ribbon cutting. Castle Orthopedics has left that building, but they haven't left Yorkville. Castle Orthopedics has now been purchased by Copley Rush. We should say Rush because now it's officially Rush. So they're actually just moving over to the main campus here in Yorkville. So, so they're going to give some tours and do a ribbon cutting this Thursday if anybody's interested. It's also the owner's desire to get a access point on 34, and he has been working with IDOT.
Is that physically possible, you think?
It is.
Now it is.
Will it go through the stoplight?
No.
No, it'll be...
What he told me is at the easternmost point of his lot, just adjacent to the CARSTAR, is what he said to me.
Oh, right in, right out.
Right in, right out, yes.
Mm.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. The owner is a man who has an engineering company and has a great relationship with IDOT. Feels very comfortable that this is going to work. So,
cool.
So that's all I have. Do you have any questions for me?
Can you tell me about Foshack?
Foshack. So yes, yeah, yeah.
Foshack. Excuse me.
Well, I said Fo. That gentleman is the actual owner of the nail salon, TJ, Bellagio Nails. And he is actually doing a number of these. Yorkville is going to be his first. And he's actually also doing, I know, at the same time concurrently in Naperville. So he wants to expand and go from being just not just being a nail salon owner to a owner of a faux restaurant. So it's a very small space in Yorkville. It's only about 1,200.
You don't need much.
Yeah.
That's
exciting. So, more choices.
What about Casa Santiago?
They didn't close on the 2nd. They ended up staying open for a couple extra days, but they are closed now, and they're going through their tooling or
restructuring.
Yes.
So, is it still going to be Mexican style, or
no? It's going to be a farm to table concept. Butcher Block 360. So.
Gotcha. Mm-hmm. Any idea when that's going to be?
About 3 weeks, he said.
Oh wow!
Yeah. That's pretty quick.
Really?
Yes. Yeah.
Wow,
that's awesome.
Yes, and technically they have like a corporation, and then they're a DBA with Casa Santiago. So we work with them with Lisa. They just have to get a new. They don't even need to reapply for a liquor license.
Right.
It's just because they have a DBA. So
cool.
We got that all.
Is that cabinet place above them open yet?
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes. That's Select Services and Lux. They are open. Yeah. They've done a beautiful job in there. So
yeah, the front of the building on Van Emmon looks incredible.
Yeah.
Renato and Tommy.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So. Awesome.
Okay.
And then Bowling Alley.
Bowling Alley. Yeah. So Bowling Alley is going to open. So Jay DeMarco and John Cooney are the operators of Roadhouse Route 47. So they are renting. So they don't own these buildings. So the transaction took the buildings from First Midwest, someone bought them, and then they signed a lease with them. So it's a different owner.
Did they buy both locations for 1.8 or whatever it was?
I have no idea exactly how that transaction went down, but the person would have had to have purchased the Yorkville property and the Richland Park property.
Yeah, they were tied together.
They were tied together, yes.
I think they're...
Because I knew somebody wanted to buy this one, but...
Couldn't do it.
So you couldn't do it because you didn't want to buy the Richland.
Right. Yeah. And I think it was more than 1 point.
I think the paper said 1.8 or something.
Yeah. I don't know what it ended up being. That was through First Midwest. But that transaction took place, and then they signed, these gentlemen, this group, signed the lease with the new owner.
Nice.
So, and it's their intention to be open as quickly as possible. They're just trying to do backwards stuff. As a matter of fact, today Jay and I were talking, and I said, make sure that you talk to Mike from the fire department, and I said, but you got to come into the city, but just heads up, these are the people Amy's looking for. Yeah, we're all looking for you. So they've got a lot of moving parts right now. So
Parfection, that's sold or is under contract?
It's under contract.
Are they going to tear that down or revamp it, or do you know what the intention
is? Parfection, the group is called RAM, R-A-M-M, a development company, and they're going to be, matter of fact, I was just working on that when I was coming here, so it looks like toward the end of January, and I know Christy, Dave Schultz talked to you.
The 17th
is what he's hoping for to apply. So it's going to be assisted living.
Oh, gotcha.
In the back, and then they're going to be commercial in the front.
A commercial
right?
piece in the front, yeah.
Okay,
yeah. Nice. Yeah, so that's what he said. January 17th is what he's aiming for. And then that's going to be a process because it's got to get PUD, rezoned, all that good stuff. So.
Awesome.
But have they the sale finally? Did they sell?
No. Because they won't close on that until they get all of their entitlement work done.
Okay.
So
that makes sense.
Yeah. So.
So no new auto parts stores coming to Yorkville?
Not this month.
Mattress?
Small.
Not the
no
world.
No mattress.
World.
We don't have any mattress stores.
You used to.
Yeah.
And Reggie Wangs is adding a new slide.
They're adding a new slide.
Or
yes.
Attraction.
Yes.
An attraction.
Yes. Yeah.
A racer slide.
It's a racer, yes, it's a racer, yeah.
Oh, that's right,
Yes. So they're very excited. And they did, matter of fact, I met with Dawn last week, and they had a great Christmas season because, you don't even realize it because they're not open, but it's very busy for them because they do a lot of sales for people that buy gifts. So it was very strong. So.
Very nice.
Okay.
Any other questions? Nice job, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Number 5, EDC 2020-05, Annual Foreclosure Update.
Just a brief update. We continued our downward trend. Actually, this is 2 years in a row that we've decreased by 5 new filings for new foreclosures. So last year we were at 56, now we're at 51, so about a 9% decrease. Just summarizing by ward, Ward 4 had the highest amount of the newly filed foreclosures. By subdivision breakdown, Grand Reserve and Otter Creek, which are a part of that, were tied for the highest amount of newly filed foreclosures in calendar year 2019, which is understandable because they have the highest mix of single family and townhomes. The property type breakdown has continued to be the highest filing is for single family detached residences. And the future trend seems to be either leveling off or decreasing slightly. Realty Track listed that Kendall County is no longer in the top 5 counties with the highest rates for foreclosures in Illinois. Kendall County had a newly filing foreclosure rate of 1 for every 840 homes, while Yorkville had a slightly better rate of 1 foreclosure for every 872 homes. So, seems to be okay. Expectations, as I said, for foreclosures will continue to level off or decrease. So, if you have any questions, feel free to let me know.
That's awesome. Alderman Funkhauser?
It's nice to Ward 3 is not at the top of the list.
Yeah. Good work.
First round. And I don't mean to interrupt, but did anybody see this last night on the news?
From Wall Street, the Census Bureau data to identify the richest counties in every state. The median household income for a family in Kendall County, $92,000. That's compared to a statewide average of about $68,500. The county, which includes the towns of Oswego and Yorkville, has low poverty and unemployment rates. It also has a larger share of college-educated adults.
So that was on Channel 5 News yesterday.
Oh, they clipped it.
At 5:10. Yes, and I put it on a DLK. So follow me on DLK, and then you'll see all these interesting things.
Well, it continued on and said, largely due to the city administrator, Bart Olson.
Yeah.
That's the part I heard out. Could be fake news.
Definitely fake news. I appreciate
it. Sorry for coming in there.
Okay, EDC 2020-06, the Comprehensive Plan Amendment Discussion.
All right, I'll start off with my first section, and then Christy will move on to the second section of discussion. So since 2017, there have been 5 different projects that have actually been approved by City Council, basically rezones or special uses that go against the future land use plan per the map. At the time that these were approved, most of these, actually all of these, there's language within the comprehensive plan that talks about commercial space along the main corridors being important. So while these decisions were made, even though it might have said a residential future land use, most of the time PCC and City Council decided, you know, since it's on a major thoroughfare, that it would be best to go commercial, even though the map color wasn't the same. So just over those 2 years, 2017 had 3, 2018 had 1, and 2019 had 1. This is really just a cleanup, just to show that, you know, we'll be in line with the new zoning versus the future land uses. The first one was Cedarhurst Living, which showed suburban neighborhood, and obviously Cedarhurst Living is a business, so that was changed to commercial office to be in line with that. The next two kind of go together. It's for the Casey's General Store. The Casey's General Store and Kaufman Carpets came in and annexed into the city at the same time. And when they did so, they zoned to B3. So again, destination commercial, that's made for commercial land uses, generally auto-oriented, is what we're suggesting to change that to. On that same corner is, and now we're moving to 2018, the Heartland Business Center. Also showed mid-density residential. We're actually requesting that to go to commercial office. They came in for a PUD amendment to get the side yard setback because they wanted to build an office there. So instead of doing like a destination commercial, it would be more appropriate to do a commercial office there. Nothing's been built, but they are approved for it. So moving forward, we decided that that would be appropriate to change that land use. And then finally, for 2019, the Hively Windmill Farms area on 126 and 71, they came into a rezone on that hard corner for B3. So we're suggesting to change that as well to destination commercial. And like I said, these are all really just to align now with their current land uses, current zoning. And while we only went over this for 2 years, we'll probably just do this annually from now on if anything changes. I don't know if you want to move on or if we want to do questions first.
One question then. Mm-hmm. So on the Schoolhouse Road area there, why wouldn't, don't you think it would be wise to do the whole, both sides of that intersection? Because it probably will be the same situation on the other side of the street.
So we're waiting to see what interested development. We did have someone come in, and they were not proposing commercial. They were actually proposing residential.
On that corner?
In that area. Yeah.
Really?
So we're waiting to see. Typically, you change a comprehensive plan, future land use designation, if a couple of things occur. If changes happen in regards to transportation land uses around there, where utilities come where they weren't before, or if there's a developer incentive to come in and request a change, that's when you begin to look at your comprehensive plan and begin to update. Other trends could happen as well, but Jason hit on most of these were developer-initiated changes, and they fell and met into the standards for rezoning, and so that's why we're changing.
Because the property to the west of that, that was going to be, that was the Edwards property, right, at one time? So
Yes. That
would have been all, that would have been residential then, probably.
So we don't want to preempt what a future developer may come in at this point. The comprehensive plan at the time was based off of what the approved land uses were in some instances that had a PUD plan. So they didn't want to change that.
And just as a reminder, we are, 4 years now out from our last voted on comprehensive plan. So, it takes several months to choose a firm to go with and to actually complete it. So, we probably aren't too far off from starting that process.
About
2 years, 2 3 years
away.
Any other questions, anyone? They're quiet down there, Funk.
I'm waiting. Correct. So this will be going to this will go to public hearing as an amendment, most likely in February, and then in this section, I just showed the places that are changing. It is our plan to eventually do a full map change. At the moment, due to timing and how long that would take, we're planning on doing an appendix, just marking on the future land use page, four changes from 2019, please see appendix, whatever, and we'll have these done. And then when we update the full map later, we'll add that in.
All right. And then you guys will be there. It says Tuesday night's meeting if anyone has any questions.
Mm-hmm.
Is that on the agenda to talk about? Or no?
Well, we were talking about tonight.
Oh, okay. I thought you meant...
Not the 14th. It'll come back.
Okay.
Wouldn't they need to vote to initiate it, or have we not done that in the past?
No, we haven't done that in the past.
All right.
Okay. Where are we at here?
Yeah, Alderman Road B.
Alderman, corridor.
So, continuing along what Jason was saying, this is a request for consideration of an additional amendment to the comprehensive plan, particularly for the Alderman Corridor, north of the railroad tracks, just south of Galena. There was a request from the county for us to look at changing our land use. Right now, that area is estate conservation residential. And the county asked us to look at possibly an industrial zone, future land use, and our correlation would be general industrial or any other compatible future land use. So just to open up this discussion a little bit broader, I'll give you a little bit of history, walk it back, and then bring us to where we are now. We did our land use analysis as part of the comprehensive plan in 2016. We looked at a lot of factors. We were coming out of the recession, so we had kind of the blinders taken off and seeing what was actually happening, the lay of the land. And we looked at not only land use strategies, but principles for future land use analysis of all of our infrastructure, what our capabilities were for future development. And we did a particular corridor study of Alderman. When we finished that plan, we came up with the concept of focusing on the industrial parcels along Eldenade that were already incorporated into our planning boundary, not only the planning boundary, within our city. So you're looking at Konechak, Lincoln Properties, those there. There's about 400 acres. And we said we need to focus on that before we start expanding industrial land uses north of there, particularly because they are not within the YBSD, the Sanitary District's future planning area. So if we were to bring in industrial, most industrial users are heavy water and sometimes solid users, and we need to take that into consideration. If we're going to land something there, we need to be able to provide utilities for it. That's a general concept with any land use development. So we intended to focus on those areas. Those areas are marked as general industrial and future land use, but the area north of, I think it's Konechak property up until Galena, is estate residential. So upon adoption of the plan in 2016-2017, Kendall County, particularly their planning commission, approached the city about revising it to be consistent with their plan, which was originally adopted in 1994 and was last revised in 2011. And their land use for that area is mixed-use business, and that includes office, research, and manufacturing. So to fast forward to where we are today, the City Council, we took that to Planning and Zoning Commission and City Council, and they felt at the time that we should not move to amend our comprehensive plan. So we had received another letter, and this was based upon the recent approval of about $45 million from the state of Illinois for the Eldemain Road River crossing, so extending Eldemain Road south across the Fox River. So they said, you might want to look at that again now because Prairie Parkway is no longer the focus, which was a heavy focus of their plan for comprehensive, why they wanted that industrial, which was a heavy focus of our prior comprehensive plan, why we saw that as industrial and commercial. And I said, would you please look at your land use plan again? So I'm bringing it forward to you for consideration. Just a couple points of note in here. Their future land use plan, again, was heavily based on Prairie Parkway. I don't believe that the numbers that would have been generated from a connection from 88 to 80 would generate the same numbers with an Eldemain. But it would be a secondary north-south crossing that we should consider. Again, their numbers were based off of 2004 data. Ours was more updated, and it was more of an analysis on market trends. And then the trend of development in the area alone that we are looking at, if you look on page 3, Kendall County itself has rezoned two parcels in that area. One they rezoned to residential, R1, which would meet up with our current estate residential future land use. There are homesteads in that area, which would match up with our estate conservation district. And then they had another rezoning, and that was in 2017, and it was to a manufacturing designation, but it's not a true manufacturing land use. It is just a towing and truck storage use. So we haven't seen that turnover in that area that they were expecting to see during their horizon of their plan. So consideration that you should take if you are looking to heed to some of the changes that has happened. Again, you should look at land use as far as transportation corridors. Has anything changed? So we have Eldemain. That's a change. Have we seen a trend in development in the other direction, in either direction? We're kind of split. We've seen residential and we've seen manufacturing. And then the last component is capacity. Would we have the capacity to support this type of land use? And right now, we really don't as far as utilities. The nearest utilities about for water is about 2,400 feet away, and the nearest connection for sanitary is about 1,900 feet away. So staff laid out a couple options, one being keep it as it is, talked about the pros and cons. We could then amend it to general industrial, talked about the pros and cons of that as well, or there's another option, we can change it to agricultural zone. And there's pros and cons on that. However, which way you decide staff to move forward, I'll bring that to a public hearing before the Planning and Zoning Commission. They'll have an opportunity to provide their feedback, and then we'll bring it back to City Council for final determination.
Just one further note before we dive into this discussion here on the utilities and then the trend part of it. We've talked about it as part of our goal setting that there's been a number of state-initiated large economic development industrial projects that have been looking for sites in the entire Midwest. And this site has been, I don't know if finalist is the right word, but in consideration a few times for a bunch of different, large projects. And so when you get into the utility discussion for those large projects, when you're looking at 200 acres for a single user, depending on what it is and what they do, you might be talking about a $5 million water and sewer extension being a blip on their radar, or it might be, that a $55 million water and sewer treatment plant is also feasible. So that's just one, color component of that discussion is there are types of users that can render that discussion useless.
And that's a good point. Bart was talking about the properties that are already identified as manufacturing in our comprehensive plan.
Sure.
We're focusing on those north. So if utilities are brought there, then it may be a little bit easier to extend utilities north to this area.
And that area has that, that's where that recapture west of Fox Hill, right?
This is the area north of 34, so this is not subject to the Fox Hill recapture. It is subject to an intergovernmental agreement for El Domain Road recapture based on the amount of frontage on El Domain.
For any newly annexed properties.
Correct.
So none of the ones that are already within our corporate boundary.
So, can I go?
Sure.
So while it was Archer Daniel Midland was with them, right?
Yeah.
That was their big lottery?
That was one of the first ones,
okay,
yeah.
So while that whole thing was going on, this has existed as it has existed since the comp plan. But it didn't change for the comp plan, right? It's been the same.
No, it wouldn't have affected that property because, again, it's already identified as industrial.
So if an industrial user is looking for something, they're not necessarily starting with looking at zoning. They're looking at what's available. So regardless of whether or not there are utilities here, it's also regardless of whether or not it's zoned industrial, if it's advantageous to consider the site, it's advantageous to consider the site, period, right? So changing this would put us in line with what the county sees for the long-term vision, but it doesn't. That doesn't become, like, binding. It's not like the gospel. It doesn't have. It's not going to, like.
It doesn't. And I know that the, I'll say that the common sense fear is that if you don't change it and we're trying to attract industry there, that, yes, they may look at that Lincoln Prairie site and say that that's okay, but maybe they can't come to terms. And so, we want to be encouraging to development in the adjacent properties, too.
Right. So a potential buyer could come in and say, well, yeah, this is available, but in our experience of different municipalities, maybe we can't get it rezoned, so they could be deterred, potentially?
That's the fear. Whether that's founded in fact or not is a different story, but I know that that has been verbalized to me a few times by a few different people.
Yeah. So
the flip side to that comment is these parcels are not incorporated in Yorkville. So if an industrial user did want to land there, they don't have to come to us. They can go to the county if they can fulfill their needs for water.
But they would have to come to us if they want our water and sewer.
Correct.
Right, yeah.
Correct.
Which probably they would need to do.
Right.
Correct.
Because the county couldn't supply
would
that.
Would then prompt us to reevaluate.
Yeah.
Right.
The county is trying to say, we have money to El Domain Road. We foresee it as a pretty big, business and industrial corridor there. Come join us and share in our vision of, the El Domain corridor. That's the
genesis. So there's really not necessarily anything gained outside of understanding that they want kind of our maps to kind of,
and it's more attractive.
Pulling in the same direction.
Yeah, yeah.
Sure.
But the other side is also true, is that it doesn't really do anything for us outside of assist the county in identifying an area which may or may not end up becoming a booming area.
I would say that it assists us in developing that area more so than the county. Even though we are talking about a scenario where if somebody's going to build a giant industrial development out there and they can afford a $55 million water and sewer treatment plant, my guess is they're going to want to be incorporated at that point. So.
Is that the purple blip?
It's north of it.
So it's north. So all the land uses along El Domain are purple. Are already incorporated in Yorkville. They're already zoned. They're zoned industrial.
Yeah,
and in our future land use, they're
actually
identified as industrial.
Oh, yeah,
it's just
right
that gray area above it.
Yep.
So, Joel,
yeah.
What you just spoke about, where it benefits us is it shows the intent of, or the will of right. what your film wants.
Yeah, because the intent is based on dollars, and the will is like, yeah.
And right now, what we put on there is, you know, the intent of Yorkville is, the reality is, when we did the comp plan, we thought, okay, it's not going to go as anything intense. It's very rural. Put it out there as suburban residential, low density. Now that Tennell County has completed their road, they've got the approval for the bridge, and fully funded, that plan is going to move forward at some point
right.
of actually realizing that this is a industrial park. Plano has pushed their side. They've got the industrial park over there. They built the transfer station. They're aggressively pursuing users in that space there along the corridor. And that's where this is kind of coming about. The county wants to see it. We want to see it regardless. I think the county would like to have it in the county, but it's more advantageous to be in the city if it's an industrial user.
And if they do apply or do approach us about using water and sewer, they would have to be annexed? Or they wouldn't?
You don't have to be legally, but there's no reason that we should allow somebody of that scale to be
right.
not
right.
annexed.
Right. Right. Because if they're going to go into the county and try to do water, I mean, the amount of water that they're going to pull is going to be like what's going on over there at Menards. Menards has their own well.
Mm-hmm.
They're in the city, but they have an agreement that they're paying for
yeah.
usage.
Right.
They have control over what they pull out, but they have to pay for it still. Yeah, they just have...
Yeah, you're going to protect the aquifer. Right. I think the Menards one is a shallow well, if I remember correctly,
yeah.
and it's on the other side of... I think it's on the other side of the, whatever the fault line is.
Yeah, so, they're
not drawing
they
from
affect
our water
us
table.
Actually more than they affect Plano. I think that's how that works.
Okay.
Because we're
any new customer you?
No, in terms of the water.
Okay.
So that well... They wouldn't have to pump the water through town to get it to the site. They just have their own well. They can control it, but they pay for it. So.
Right.
Now, that was their compromise. If we have somebody come in and they said, hey, we want to put in our own well and have our own system, you could do it as long as you come to an agreement that they pay for it.
Yeah.
It's just some places want more control. But for our sake, the control and having the land in the municipality, looking at what's going on with Metro, and what's going on with the Elderman Corridor,
mm-hmm.
I think that's a good time to start talking about changes to the railroad corridor as well as Elderman.
Right. Well, and this is just one of the steps that you have to kind of take to make
yeah.
sure that both types of government are kind of working towards the same goal, which is
well,
new business.
I mean, what's the downside if you don't? Then you have to scramble later on and adjust if there's a suitor that wants to purchase in that area and have it rezoned.
No, there's no scramble. It,
no.
It's the same process that we would take any other process. Just like Jason did at the end of the year, we'd say a new user game, train a development change, change on the map.
Yeah, we're just talking about these other ones. This one came up. The county had a request. They've actually had other requests of this as well.
Yeah.
And it's just one of those. We either wait till the comprehensive plan runs up, reevaluate it, or we could take the opportunity now that there's kind of a new, fresh look with the bridge and the thought process of emphasizing this corridor.
Yeah, we're also kind of supporting their vision, which doesn't necessarily negatively impact us. It's kind of developing something that we've already kind of talked about, investing more time and attention. So I don't see any issue with, you know, having our maps the same color.
Just keep. I want to make one point. Keep in mind, the county does have an entity or arm that is pursuing manufacturing in the county, which is counterintuitive to it being in the city, because then we lose out on a potential revenue. So we do directly compete with the county.
Sure.
I know we want to agree with them on what this corridor would be, but it's more advantageous for the city to have anything developed within city limits.
Right.
So if the county shows it one way, as compared to us, you know, well, they might save a few dollars if they go through the county. And then we miss out on it, potentially.
Yeah, but the last thing I would want to do is, like, undercut the county and what they're doing, because at least the end of my day, we're all kind of paying into the same pot of money. So even though, yeah, it wouldn't necessarily benefit the city itself, I'm still a resident of the county.
Right.
So it's.
Well, we have an additional tax that we get.
Sure.
That if they're in the county, we don't get. So that's all
right.
I'm saying is, we get to add that extra layer of government onto it.
Yeah.
Jesus.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds horrible to say out loud, but like,
but I guess we have to look out for our own interests. We are the city. We represent the city, not the county.
Right.
So.
Trying to keep the taxpayer dollars down. All right, moving on to old business.
So on that one, do you want us to pursue formally amending the map in that, you know, per their request, or is that something you want to have more discussion on? Because if you say, you know, yes, pursue it, then we run it parallel with the existing amendments that you've already approved.
That's part of a public hearing.
Yep.
I would say yes, pursue it, only because I have many reasons to not pursue it, other than the potential of potentially not being able to capture a specific type of tax. But at the same time, if we're going to develop that portion, we're still going to be benefited as, you know, residents and people who work in Yorkville. That's one of those things where you can't not make a decision just to potentially make a couple extra bucks. And I know we're talking about millions, but it's, I don't want to stifle potential development or the potential drafting of a plan for that entire area and then throw it askew just because I want to make sure that Yorkville gets all the dollar. It's like, I want to see the area succeed. I want to see Kendall County succeed. I want to see, you know, the state succeed. So it's not like I can't just wear one hat. I have four hats on right now. I got country, state, county, and city. And it's not unfortunate, it's just the way that it is. So I'd rather we succeed as opposed to just us succeed.
And to that, we don't always collect the tax that we would be generating on a new industrial. We've had a couple pieces come in that we abate. There's an incentive agreement. They get that money back, or it's used for other purposes, payback part of the development of the project. So we don't actually see that on several of these developments. So,
what do you think, Ken?
I think I'm agreeing with what Joel said. I mean, first of all, we don't have anything concrete anyhow, so.
What do we stand to lose, basically? Mm-hmm. I mean, realistically. I would agree with that.
I'd stick it forward.
Threes, yep. Any other conclusions, questions, comments, concerns with this before we move on? Thank you, guys. Appreciate it. Old business EDC 2019-91 art program.
So I'm bringing this back to you after the holiday. Prior to the holiday, we talked about the plan, what you felt about it, some of your instinctual comments that came out, feedback. And it was four things actually asked me to look at. One was to coordinate, kind of get some feedback from the school, you know, some private organizations, if they would even be interested in engaging the city in some of these projects. Talk with the Parks Department, see if they have any ideas for collaboration, research some other public arts programs in other communities, and then identify some of the city-owned properties that we can do an immediate project for. So I reached out to four educational institutions, Waubonsie Community College, Yorkville School District, the Christian High School, and then SEAL, the new school that's come in. All were ecstatic about the program. Actually, the high school, I engaged a lot of conversation with them as far as how we would set this up, and they could probably work this into their curriculum for their juniors and seniors that have an art based school curriculum. So they were pretty excited about that. I did reach out to the Kiwanis Club. I didn't hear back from anyone, but I'm sure that they would probably be just as interested. Potential parks collaboration. Had a long conversation with Tim Evans, the director of Parks and Rec, and he had a really long list of ideas. I had some ideas. Here, just a few that I put down there for you. The paint by numbers. We have volunteers. You kind of sketch out the areas. You give them a number and paint, and they go, and then you finish with a mosaic of some type of art project. That could be something incorporated with or as part of a parks event or rec event. Then there's a park raffle, so tickets are sold for various prizes and the proceeds go for funding of an art installation. Dueling brushes, this is the one I came up with just looking at other communities. It's a contest where qualify artists, they kind of compete, you can use any type of medium, and then you vote, and that will be the one that's the winner. They can use that as accolades for, you know, any future you know, resumes they want to put out there saying, I won this contest. But then all the art installations could be scattered about the city. And you can do kind of a scavenger hunt kind of thing with that, too. And then there's Auction of the Foxes. We did reach out to a company that does fiberglass artwork for communities like the Bulldogs that you guys had mentioned. And they are working on a quote for us. Jason and I, we said 20. Just gave us a quote of like 20 foxes of a certain size, I think 3 feet we were talking about. Mm-hmm. And we'll see what they come up with as far as pricing. And then we researched other communities. Ken had mentioned the community in Wisconsin, Stevens Point. I have some pictures of there. That's more of all volunteer, you know, people providing either in-kind donations or individual gifts. And that is actually run by a city as well.
That's what I thought.
And then the Bulldogs is one in Batavia, and that's a partnership, and they have kind of a nonprofit with the school and the library. I don't know if that's something that you want us to look at engaging into for funding. And then the last thing you asked me to look at is the potential city-owned properties. In the report, it had some that we had some immediate opportunities for projects, and I just pulled them out for you right here. So the wall and mural, the interactive sculptures, and the banners. So with all that feedback, staff's intention is to continue to reach out to these organizations with whatever feedback you want to tell me, how you want me to proceed. But in the interim, we are requesting that we move forward with approving and adopting the plan. And then there's a draft ordinance attached for your review.
I thought it was awesome the first time I read through it. When you can get buy-in from schools, you realize that some of these kids may or may not stay within the community for a long period of time, but what ends up happening is that you create a bookmark in time that ends up being not only referenced through, you know, visual aids and stuff like that, but it becomes kind of like a badge of honor for whether it's, you know, a graduating class of, like, you know, I graduated high school in 97. All of my murals all reference, you know, very, very sad emotional moments in my life where somebody, you know, was either murdered in gang violence or died from health complications, but I still can picture in my head the murals that were done after, you know, Moshe died and Rahman died. So understanding that there's a lot of, like, emotion and, like, cool types of retrospection and nostalgia involved in this stuff, the fact that the high school jumped at it is awesome. So I think it would make perfect sense to allow those things to kind of materialize. And the fact, I knew that Tim would jump at it because he's been trying to find ways of making sure that the stamp of what Yorkville has become over the last 10 years lasts the next 50. And I think that's where we got a really cool opportunity, because while downtown, a lot of it is a blank slate, you know, it's a freaking parking lot for the most part, there's a whole bunch of foundations down there. Well, that doesn't mean that they have to sit like that forever surrounded by what's always been. And that's why, like, looking at those grain silos and going, man, one of these days those should be two fat cobs of corn, you know, or one of these days making the turkey vulture the actual animal of Yorkville and doing something with it. I'm joking. But understanding that, like, people are already fired up about, I want to help, I want to participate, and the ideas that you have, the dueling brushes is dope. Like, that's really cool. Because if you think about it, if you give somebody who's an artist a checklist, all right, you got to get two sponsoring businesses. They don't have to be in Yorkville, but they're going to have their potential artwork will be displayed in Yorkville, and their name will be displayed in Yorkville. You tell them what to do, and we can base that off of 1,000 different communities, because these ideas aren't new. It's just finding ways of applying them to our community. And it's like, this is something where when you said Kiwanis, and I was like, oh man, because I know Kiwanis jumps at this types of stuff. But I mean, you got 4-H, you've got, there's 4 or 5 other different types of community organizations in Yorkville that just don't know about this yet. Mm-hmm. Where it could be something where every one of these organizations has an artist that it's either part of that organization or somebody that they know, and they go out and they raise the $50 to $500 to supply this person with the tools to create it. And then, like I said, you're creating bookmarks in time of where people were and who they were involved in and what makes them, you know, experience life, and you've now associated Yorkville with that. Which, yeah, we don't have money for a lot of stuff, but together 50 cents can go a long way. I threw $50 towards Australia last night because of those freaking fires. It's only $37 in Australia, believe it or not. But understanding that everybody's got a couple pennies to throw in on something like this because it includes joy. And that's part of the thing where I'm looking through all your ideas, and I'm like, you could after a couple cocktails, you can make these four ideas like 50. So I think that's an awesome start. Mm-hmm. I don't want to dictate which direction you go with it because I think you've already done an incredible job. But I think that's the direction we want to go in is this has to be buy-in between city and parks and city and parks and schools. And we don't have a lot of money to spend on this. We can't spend all the time in the world on it. But it's important because there's already excitement.
Why not even get the elementary schools involved?
Oh, yeah.
As like a mentoring program. So you've got the high schoolers working with them to show them, like, hey, this is what the cool stuff
that
we can do.
What they did with the Madrigals last year.
My only question is, what does it cost us to do this program?
It could cost us anything from time.
Yeah.
Which is nothing, just coordination. Or, depending on how far you want to go, it could cost us, you know, depending on what you want to do, a mural could be $30,000.
Yeah.
So,
I want to follow up with the school thing. My daughter graduated in 2009, and she was across the board on art, one of the best they had. It never got outside the school district's walls because there wasn't you submit your stuff, and you got judged, and it stayed there. It never went outside.
Right.
She went to Western Illinois. They grabbed her, and she was doing all their PR. Because of that, they seen her work. Western Illinois said, we want you to do athletic banners, press guides, all that stuff. So she was, they just took her and they seen what she, because she showed some of her portfolio there. So that was the only reason she got that exposure, because she used to have the portfolio. Now, I have noticed, though, my son just graduated. He's a business person. And now there is some competition. Like, he was in competitions that go to NIU and all area, you compete. So there is some of that now, but I think, like, with art, I think it would be huge if there's some way you can take it outside the school district.
Well, there's also,
and that's a junior, senior.
There could be a possibility of there being a public art grant through some of the universities around us. Because I know that when I was at Western, I forget what bar it was, but they had a thing where they were painting old kegs. And it sounds stupid and immature, but it was actually something where the person who won that ended up taking that and putting it on his resume to apply for a separate grant, and got it, as stupid as it sounds. Okay, so, like, anything can become a vehicle. But, you know, you set the parameters. All right, we don't want to have murals on brand-new masonry constructed since 2009. Well, like, you know, I have all these different parameters of where it's allowable. And you allow people to, hey, we're going to put a mural up on our building. Okay, who is it? What's the concept? Just make sure it's not, you know, lewd or racist or homophobic or sexist, whatever. As long as there's some criteria. And it can be super, super simple. And it's all based on your guys' opinion. And then if you want to get city council approval, which I don't think you have to do that, if you, you know, needed to go up above, you know, ask the mayor what he thinks. But it's more of set the parameters, have some ideas out there. Somebody will run with it because you've already got excited.
Because I look in here and I see three of the fellow aldermen, my kids are out now, but you guys have young kids, and they're going to be coming through this high school, and anything like this you do now really helps them down the road.
Oh, yeah.
So
I went to school with the artist that just did the world's biggest Starbucks downtown, so he does all kinds of stuff like that, but, you know, you put it out there, and like in our school, my high school was in Sandwich, and one of the graduating classes in the 70s did the Indian Chief on the wall. Mm-hmm. And then the guy that just did Starbucks went in and did another mural recently, and they put their name on it, and everybody sees that forever. And it's, you know, it's a cool part of history.
Yeah, and it could also be something where you have that private artist, you know, and I've got a Rolodex full of them too, but it's maybe it's something where we can have that make somewhat of a teaching moment where we have these artists who are doing something, but then have it filled in by the art class and stuff like that. Like, the idea with the York film we're talking about doing it on the Hill, when we started talking about this, I was like, man, if the Yorkville itself was constructed out of a white material that could be painted and be somewhat semi-permanent when it was painted, maybe that's our installation right there, because now we've got a canvas, and maybe every 8 years we paint it white to start over. But as long as you've got a canvas and you've got some rules and somebody who's excited about it, like an art department, if that becomes the Yorkville High School's, and that's what they do, is they help facilitate it, and they invite all the rest of the community out, you've got the place, you've got the people who are involved, and then, it becomes a bookmark. And that's, I think that's important for a community, especially when we're talking about developing downtown and not having the money to do it. You have to do something. And I think this is a really, really cool way of doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Any other questions, comments?
I think it's awesome.
Yep.
Good.
So we'll move that forward to City Council for discussion and consideration.
Sounds good. Additional business? Anything? All right. Well, then I will call adjournment at 6:55.
Thank you.